Fuel the Fire isn't just another romance novel. It's the literary equivalent of watching two brilliant minds engage in an elaborate chess match while falling deeper in love with every calculated move. This New York Times bestseller by identical twin authors Krista and Becca Ritchie has cultivated a devoted following known as the Fizzle Force, with fans creating viral hashtags like #RCCThisIsLove to celebrate the unique relationship at its center. What makes this book particularly fascinating is how it challenges conventional romance tropes by featuring two highly intellectual protagonists whose love language consists of vocabulary competitions, chess games, and philosophical debates. Even celebrities like Emma Roberts have praised the series for its complex characters and emotional depth, making it a standout in contemporary romance literature. Rose and Connor Cobalt represent a rare breed of literary couple, two fiercely intelligent, ambitious individuals whose relationship began as academic rivalry before evolving into profound love. Their story begins at Model UN when 15-year-old Connor encounters a passionate young Rose arguing about gender discrimination in room assignments. Even then, he's drawn to her storm-like intensity that breaks his mundane existence. Their initial encounter sets the tone for their future relationship, with Rose delivering an impromptu speech that leaves the entire assembly spellbound and Connor realizing he's met his intellectual equal. 11 years later, they've built a life together that balances their individual strengths. Connor, with his strategic mind and calculated approach to every situation, complements Rose's passionate perfectionism and fierce loyalty. Their relationship thrives on intellectual stimulation. They play chess with unique stakes. When Connor captures a piece, Rose removes clothing. When Rose captures one, Connor shares a truth. Engage in vocabulary competitions and solve crossword puzzles together in bed. Their morning routine often includes debating philosophical concepts over coffee, with topics ranging from existentialism to game theory. What makes their partnership particularly compelling is how they support each other's weaknesses. When Rose feels anxious about rock climbing with her siblings, Connor secretly breaks her harness buckles, giving her a face-saving excuse to avoid the activity while preserving her dignity. Similarly, Rose provides emotional grounding for Connor, who struggles with expressing vulnerability despite his psychological brilliance. She's developed subtle ways to help him process emotions, like their shared journal, where they write letters to each other during challenging times. Their communication style is distinctly their own. They frequently speak French to each other in intimate moments, switching between formal and informal address, vous and tu, as a reflection of how their relationship evolved from formal competitors to intimate partners. As Connor explains, "Our relationship began formally as competitors, so we switch between the two as we please. The rules don't apply to us." This linguistic dance extends to their professional lives, where they often communicate in coded references to literature and historical events that only they understand. Their intellectual equality forms the foundation of their relationship, creating a partnership where neither dominates the other. They simply challenge each other to grow in different ways. During their weekly intellectual dates, they take turns teaching each other about their respective areas of expertise, Rose sharing her knowledge of art history and literature, while Connor introduces complex psychological theories and mathematical concepts. Their love isn't about completing each other, but rather enhancing who they already are. At its heart, Fuel the Fire celebrates the power of chosen family. Despite their wealth and privilege, the Calloway sisters, Rose, Lily, and Daisy, along with their partners and friends, have created a support system that transcends blood ties. They live together in a shared home, raising their children communally and facing public scrutiny as a united front. Rose's fierce protectiveness of her sisters reveals her emotional depth beneath her cold exterior. When Daisy reveals she needs to have an ovary and tube removed due to endometrioma cysts, threatening her ability to have children, Rose immediately offers, "My uterus is all yours. Whenever you want one, I'm ready." This willingness to serve as a surrogate demonstrates Rose's unconditional love for her sister, prioritizing Daisy's happiness above all else. The sisters' bond extends to everyday moments as well. When Rose finally moves out of their shared home into a mansion down the street with Connor and Jane, all three sisters break into tears despite the short distance between their new homes. Lily worries about losing their daily routines, while Daisy seeks reassurance that Rose will still attend her fertility treatment appointments. These emotional goodbyes highlight how deeply intertwined their lives have become. Even in business matters, family loyalty prevails. When Lo mentions his half-sister Willow is being harassed by press who think she's related to them, Rose immediately offers her one of their guest rooms. She's your family. What is there to think about? This automatic inclusion of extended family members demonstrates the expansive nature of their love. The novel portrays family not as a static entity, but as an evolving, chosen connection that requires active nurturing. When Lo and Lily ask Connor and Rose to be godparents to their son Moffy, Rose is deeply moved, despite trying to maintain her composure. Lo acknowledges she's a kick-ass mom who would fight for his son, validation that means everything to Rose, who has always felt in progress regarding motherhood. One of the most compelling aspects of Fuel the Fire is its exploration of privacy in an era of constant media exposure. Rose and Connor face relentless paparazzi intrusion, with photographers following their every move and tabloids dissecting their relationship. Their struggle represents a broader commentary on celebrity culture and the public's entitlement to access private lives. The couple devises an ingenious strategy to redirect media attention away from their daughter Jane. They deliberately create salacious headlines about themselves. Connor sports a hickey he forgot to cover up, they stage a shopping trip at a sex shop, and Connor even performs a striptease atop a bar during St. Patrick's Day celebrations. These calculated moves demonstrate their willingness to sacrifice their own dignity to protect their child from unwanted exposure. The novel doesn't shy away from examining the psychological toll of this constant scrutiny. When media outlets question the authenticity of their marriage after Connor's ex-boyfriends come forward, Rose breaks down in her closet, screaming into her fur coat as she hears reporters invalidating not just her marriage, but her motherhood. The television blares accusations that she only had a child for Connor and never wanted children herself, citing her own statements from years earlier and former classmates' testimonies. Through tears, she questions why she isn't allowed to grow and change from who she was at 18. This poignant moment highlights how media narratives freeze people in time, refusing to acknowledge personal evolution and growth. The novel asks important questions about who owns our stories and whether public figures surrender their right to privacy simply by existing in the public eye. The ultimate violation comes in the form of sex tapes filmed without consent and distributed for profit. The psychological impact of having intimate moments exploited becomes a central conflict, with Rose admitting she hates that someone had control over their private moments being shared without permission. Her greatest fear is how these tapes will affect their daughter Jane as she grows up, worrying she'll be mocked by peers. Throughout the novel, power dynamics and manipulation emerge as central themes, particularly through the character of Scott Van Wright, who moves in across the street from Rose and Connor. Scott represents the darkest form of manipulation, using blackmail, intimidation, and exploitation to control others for his own gain. When Scott reveals he's purchased the mansion down the street and is working with GBA, Global Broadcasting Association, to force them back onto a reality show with their children, he offers to sell them back their sex tapes if they comply. This blatant blackmail attempt shows how privacy violations can become weapons of control. In contrast, Connor's manipulation skills are portrayed as a necessary tool for protection rather than exploitation. He initiates a fake friendship with Scott, bringing him expensive wine and enduring his vulgar comments about Rose, all while executing an elaborate plan to bring him down. This strategic deception requires Connor to compartmentalize his emotions and play a role that disgusts him, speaking vulgarly about Rose to gain Scott's trust. The emotional cost of this strategy becomes evident when Connor confesses to Rose, "I hate myself for what I just did." Despite his logical understanding of the necessity, the act of betraying his own values leaves him deeply shaken. Rose's response, "You must forgive yourself," highlights the moral complexity of using manipulation, even for righteous ends. The novel's exploration of power extends to corporate settings as well. As division head for Callaway Couture Babies, Rose faces executives who repeatedly remind her that the board will make final branding decisions despite her position. Her strategic compromise, incorporating HDC within the BFCCB, and her instruction to have someone else present it as their idea while she pretends to hate it, demonstrates her understanding of corporate power dynamics and how to navigate them effectively. At its core, Fuel the Fire explores how individuals define themselves against external expectations and pressures. Connor's struggle with publicly acknowledging his sexual history becomes a central conflict, forcing him to choose between privacy and authenticity. When media outlets reveal Connor has dated men in the past, he faces a difficult decision about how to respond. His therapist, Frederick, reveals that he first met Connor at 12 when he lacked so much empathy for the human race. Frederick notes that a narcissist is incapable of love, and he never believed Connor would love anyone until he met Rose, who made him feel for more than just himself. This transformation from detached narcissism to profound love represents Connor's journey toward authentic connection. When preparing for the press conference, he tells Rose and Jane, "The only apology I will make today is to the two of you," acknowledging that his decision affects them most. His speech recounts meeting Rose at 15 and being locked in a janitor's closet with her at 17 during Model UN, deliberately spending those 2 hours with a girl who wore passion like a dress made of diamonds and hair made of flames. Rose's identity journey involves reconciling her younger self with who she's become. When media outlets use her past statements about not wanting children to question her motherhood, she struggles with being defined by who she was rather than who she is. Her evolution from career-focused perfectionist to devoted mother, while maintaining her ambition, challenges the notion that women must choose between family and professional success. The novel also explores identity through Reich's conversation with Connor about separating his own identity from what his parents pushed him to be. Reich learned 4 languages because his mother wanted him to, and in college, he switched majors 5 times, trying to figure out who he truly was. He sees himself in Daisy because they were both yes kids growing up, struggling to define themselves apart from external expectations. One of the most powerful themes in Fuel the Fire is the redefinition of vulnerability as strength rather than weakness. Both Rose and Connor begin the story with defensive mechanisms against showing vulnerability. Rose with her sharp tongue and perfectionism, Connor with his calculated control and emotional detachment. Their growth comes through moments when they allow themselves to be truly vulnerable with each other. After Connor is forced to watch one of their private sex tapes with Scott and speak vulgarly about Rose to gain his trust, he breaks down in tears, admitting, "I hate myself for what I just did." This rare display of emotional pain marks significant growth for a character who typically maintains perfect control. Rose's vulnerability emerges when she admits how deeply the sex tapes have affected her, despite pretending otherwise. She confesses her fear about how they will impact their daughter's future, showing that her concern stems not from pride but from maternal protection. This honest acknowledgement of her feelings strengthens their relationship rather than weakening it. The novel challenges traditional gender expectations around vulnerability. When Connor cries, Rose doesn't see him as less masculine or powerful. Instead, she reminds him that the version of him that feels pain and love is extraordinary. Similarly, when Rose admits her anxiety about trying new sexual experiences, Connor doesn't mock her fears, but creates a safe environment for exploration. Perhaps the most powerful statement on vulnerability comes when Reich gives Connor a copy of George Bernard Shaw's Man and Superman with a highlighted passage: "The reasonable man adapts himself to the world. The unreasonable one persists in trying to adapt the world to himself. Therefore, all progress depends on the unreasonable man." This quote challenges Connor's lifelong approach of being the reasonable man because it's easier, suggesting that true courage might require being unreasonable, fighting against circumstances rather than adapting to them. The novel presents a thoughtful exploration of relationship dynamics, focusing on how partners navigate intimacy through open communication and mutual respect. Rose and Connor's relationship demonstrates how healthy partnerships develop through consistent boundary respect and emotional safety. Throughout their relationship, Connor prioritizes clear communication, regularly checking in with Rose about her comfort level. They establish a communication system using hand signals to indicate when to pause or stop, empowering Rose to control the pace of their relationship development. Their approach includes thorough discussions about comfort levels, concerns, and boundaries before advancing their physical relationship. When Rose expresses hesitation about exploring new forms of physical intimacy, Connor responds with patience and understanding. He emphasizes preparation, communication, and her complete control over the situation. After their experience, rather than dismissing her previous concerns, he validates her boundaries by acknowledging, "Everyone has their own comfort zones, and yours are valid regardless of their origin." This response reinforces their partnership's foundation of mutual understanding. This considerate approach contrasts sharply with the violation of privacy represented by unauthorized recordings. The novel emphasizes that privacy rights extend beyond physical boundaries to include control over intimate documentation. When Scott forces Connor to view private recordings without permission, it represents a serious breach of both Rose and Connor's right to privacy, transforming their moments of trust into tools of manipulation. The story also addresses privacy rights through Daisy's narrative, examining exploitation in media and entertainment. When Connor discovers Scott possessing inappropriate recordings of 17-year-old Daisy from Princesses of Philly, he recognizes this as exploitation of a minor, a serious legal and ethical violation. Demonstrating remarkable courage, Daisy takes control of the situation by initiating contact with law enforcement herself, representing an important step in reclaiming her autonomy. The novel further explores how modern media and reality television complicate issues of privacy and consent, raising important questions about exploitation and the commercialization of personal relationships in our digital world. Through various character experiences, it demonstrates how true consent must be informed, enthusiastic, and continuous, not just in physical relationships, but in all aspects of how personal lives are shared and portrayed. The final arc of Fuel the Fire demonstrates how Rose and Connor transform seemingly insurmountable obstacles into opportunities for growth and triumph. When Scott is arrested for possessing child pornography, Connor tells him, "You're like a rat snake that self-cannibalizes in captivity. You've been destroying yourself since moving across the street." This observation highlights how their enemies ultimately defeat themselves through their own moral corruption. Their victory extends beyond defeating Scott. At Jane's first birthday celebration, Rose's parents offer unexpected apologies for their failure to support her and Connor during their difficult time. One by one, family members stand in solidarity, acknowledging past misjudgments and pledging support. This reconciliation represents a deeper victory, not just overcoming external threats, but healing family wounds. The most significant triumph comes when Connor and Rose decide to break their own rules about having more children. Despite media invasiveness, Connor argues that their love trumps any external cost. "Look around us, Rose. Look at her and tell me what part of this world is so unbearable that we shouldn't give another child life." He explains that their children will be unforgettable like us, refusing to let fear dictate their family planning. In the epilogue, Rose settles into their new mansion with Connor and Jane, imagining their future house filled with the sounds of alarm clocks, bathroom doors, music, and laughter from their children. This vision of domestic joy represents their ultimate victory, creating the family they desire despite all obstacles. As Connor tells Rose on the bridge in Monet's garden, he envisions 30, 50, 60 years of marriage, returning to that same spot still consumed by love. His final whisper of toujours, always, encapsulates their enduring commitment to each other and the life they fought to build together. At its heart, Fuel the Fire presents love not as a passive emotion, but as a revolutionary force capable of transforming individuals and challenging societal expectations. Rose and Connor's relationship defies conventional romance tropes. They don't complete each other or soften each other's edges. Instead, they sharpen each other's strengths and support each other's growth. Their dynamic challenges the notion that love requires compromise or self-sacrifice, showing instead how true partnership can amplify individual authenticity. When Lowe creates the trending hashtag #RCThisIsLove with candid photos of Rose and Connor together, thousands of people share their own definitions of love inspired by their relationship. The viral response demonstrates how their unconventional partnership resonates with others seeking authentic connection beyond romantic cliches. Photos capture intimate moments, Connor supporting Rose at press conferences, Rose defending Connor against media attacks, their synchronized movements in public spaces, and quiet moments of shared understanding. Each image sparks conversations about redefining modern love and partnership. Connor's admission to Rose, "I'm always whomever or whatever people need me to be, but you were the only one who needed me to be me," reveals how true love allows for authentic self-expression rather than performance. This confession marks a turning point in their relationship, acknowledging how their bond breaks the pattern of Connor's people-pleasing tendencies. Similarly, Rose finds in Connor someone who values her sharp edges and perfectionism rather than asking her to soften herself for others' comfort. Their relationship demonstrates how love can validate rather than diminish individual identity. Their love extends beyond their marriage to encompass their entire chosen family, creating a ripple effect of healing and reconciliation. The burning of the sex tapes in their backyard fire pit becomes a powerful ritual of transformation, watching their darkest moments turn to ash while sharing deeply personal wedding vows. Connor whispers, "So long as I may be living, I live with you." And Rose replies with her own vow, both agreeing that forever is not nearly long enough. This intimate ceremony represents both an ending and a beginning, the death of old wounds and the birth of new possibilities. The transformative power of their love manifests in concrete ways throughout their community. At Jane's birthday celebration, Lowe's toast acknowledges how Connor and Rose's capacity for compassion and forgiveness has fundamentally altered their family dynamics. Their ability to move past betrayal and hurt creates a new model for relationship healing. The profound realization that their children will be raised without the burden of inherited hatred, with old feuds resolved through understanding and acceptance, represents love's ultimate power to break cycles of pain and create new pathways for future generations. Their story proves that love, when embraced fully and authentically, can become a catalyst for profound personal and social transformation.